Thanks all for joining us here for this week's Tech Law 10 as we approach our century of podcasts, would you believe it? Eric, this week, this is Jonathan Armstrong, by the way. I'm from Duane Morris in the UK. And Eric, you're over there in San Francisco, but your eyes have been turning to Washington, D.C. this week. Why is that?
That's true. Yeah, this is Eric Sinrod from Duane Morris in a foggy San Francisco. And yes, I am looking eastward for me, westward for you, to my hometown of Washington and goings on at the White House. Let me begin by saying this. Cyber threats are real and they are threatening. In this climate, the White House, Jonathan, is considering certain incentives for companies that follow government-recommended cybersecurity measures. While the Obama administration's cybersecurity program is only just taking shape right now, its tentative concepts were unveiled quite recently. This was broken to the public by Politico. And according to Politico, the program appears to include the following currently proposed features. First, a cybersecurity insurance framework that would embrace new standards that in turn could allow the emerging insurance marketplace in this area to develop more uniform insurance underwriting. Next, the possibility, and I mentioned this clearly, the possibility of liability protections for critical infrastructure owners and operators. Apparently, the Obama administration presently is studying this issue, which was controversial when previously considered by Congress. Next up is potential technical assistance for critical infrastructure owners and operators, and also special priority for specific grants for power plants, water systems, and other sectors. Next in line is the possibility of federal research money for technology that enables the new cybersecurity standards, as well as the potential for utilities to recover amounts they spend on cybersecurity investments. And then one other item that's being considered is the creation of a cybersecurity branding type of seal of approval. Jonathan, it's important to keep in mind that the foregoing list is still under development, certainly is evolving. Moreover, the cybersecurity standards that would need to be satisfied for a particular entity to qualify for government-backed incentives are not yet entirely clear. The current thinking is that the cybersecurity program would be purely voluntary. Therefore, cybersecurity standards would not be shoved down the throat of any entity. Rather, those entities that might be interested in the government incentives would decide whether to follow the government's cybersecurity standards to seek to obtain those incentives. Interestingly, I should point out, the current list of contemplated incentives does not include tax benefits. Anyway, so this is just taking shape, Jonathan, and clearly we need to stay tuned as the White House moves forward with this cybersecurity program. And I'd be interested in your thoughts in terms of, looking from the outside into our country, what you think is happening here, and what you do you believe this is a positive development, Jonathan?
I think there are certainly some interesting things on that list. Some of the things I don't like, cyber secure organization sticker, if you like, almost has the makings of the invincibility sticker on the side of the Titanic to me about it, but almost worse because it would make the organization a target, I think, in some of the DEFCON type circles. You know, how many certified organizations have you hacked into this week, rather than how many organizations have you hacked into this week. So it's a bit like the Titanic, but the icebergs are allowed to move to hit you as well.
Basically putting a target on your back, huh?
It is, yeah. So that idea I'm not a great fan of. But I do prefer aspects of the White House proposals to, for example, the EU Cybersecurity Directive, the draft directive that we've talked about before and whose details are on our website, because the forms of coercion that exist in the EU's proposals are certainly not helpful. And at the same time, I have had some experiences recently of clients who have been subjected to some quite horrific cyber attacks and have had assistance from government. And I have to tell you, Eric, I've actually been pretty impressed both by the level of knowledge and with the assistance they've been prepared to offer. And it seems to me that that's the way to go and the way to develop. There are a number of organizations, you know, the Corporate Executive Program, ICSPA, for example, who've tried to get, you know, some sharing going between public and private sector over threats. And I think that assistance is just a natural migration of the information and awareness piece. And I think that's definitely to be welcomed. Obviously, a lot of these things turn on resources, don't they? And we'd rather that our governments were, you know, prioritizing where they could have the most effect for the resource. So, but critical infrastructure absolutely would satisfy that test, wouldn't it? I mean, as more critical infrastructure moves into private hands and sometimes foreign private hands, then governments do need to embrace the owners of electricity and gas and water to make sure that the terrorists out there can't bring us to our knees.
Yep.
So can I give it a mixed welcome, Eric?
It sounds like you have. And obviously this is, you know, just being floated publicly, and we have a ways to go, so we'll see how it crystallizes, as they say.
Yeah, and very interesting. And as you know, Eric, we've started to put together some of our thoughts on cybersecurity on the Duane Morris website, which is just at www.duanemorris.com. I know, Eric, you've put some stuff up there about threats to universities, for example. I've put some stuff up there about what's happening in Europe. Very interesting article there from a colleague about the cybersecurity threats to medical devices as well. So in a dull moment, anybody who's listening, do feel free to look at those online resources as well, and we'll keep updating those as the story develops. I guess that's probably us up to 10 minutes again, is it, Eric?
It is. So we're now winding down our 99th, count them, 99th podcast to you. And in about a week or two, we're going to have our centennial, our 100th podcast. We're hoping to have a special guest on our program. We won't reveal him quite yet, but we're looking forward to that very much. And you know, keep providing us with your ideas for upcoming episodes. This is Eric Sinrod at Duane Morris. You can find me at ejsinrod@duanemorris.com. As we've told you before, we're on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and as always is the case, Jonathan gets to bring us home.
Yeah, so I'm jparmstrong@duanemorris.com. We're very interested in your thoughts, particularly about what we should discuss on the 100th podcast as well. I think we're going to reflect back on what seems to be only like a year to me, but I guess is obviously far longer, Eric. And so if you've any particular thoughts as to what we should cover, do pitch in on the LinkedIn discussion or email Eric or I, and we'll be happy to try and steer the conversation round to that next time around. All that remains is to thank you for your company over the last 99 occasions, and we hope that you'll join us for our centenary edition next time. Thanks for listening.
And if you're inclined to sing the song 99 Bottles of Beer on the Wall, now would be the time. But we'll
99 Luftballons is a better 99 song there. Do you know
what
that one, Eric?
99
Luftballon by Nena.
No.
99 Red Balloons, it was called in America. But the English version was far, far worse than 99 Luftballon.
Yes, my daughter loved that song. But why don't we together sing 99 Bottles of Beer on the Wall, 99 Bottles of Beer. Take one down, pass it around, 99 bottles of beer on the wall. All right, I think we'll stop with that.
I don't think it fits with a Quaker firm anyway, Eric.
All right, well, maybe we have consensus on that. All right, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. Bye.